They're saying something such. Yeah, they're a little rustic over it. That's not what I was going to take it, but I'll take it for the time being. All right, let's finish the mail up then. I was supposed to see how some braces. That's best of you guys. So which part, which is the system? Which is the system? First time this is referred to the concept that Noach abstains from sexual relations during the time that he was on the Torah. The question is raised as to what the reason for that would be. Why would the Torah mention that? Why would he do it, actually? And obviously it was considered to be a good thing, the correct thing to do. Even though he wasn't commanded, it wasn't mentioned he was commanded in that. But apparently there are certain things that a person can come to on his own with his own intelligence, his own his rationality. In Pasuke, I believe. Ayas Noah called Shiva Hashem. Ayas Noah. One second. I'm rather with some perfect verb. The Noah. Then Shaykh and Son of Amal Holy Maim on Earth. Shiva and Zion. The Rashi is really referring to Vayeva Noah Uzvanov. The Pasuk itself indicates this. But the Pasuk says, Vayeva Noah Uzvanov. The Ishto, when the Shave one of Ito El Ateva, Nay, Nay, Hamabo. Now there's an indication in that prophet that they refrain from sexual relations. Where's the indication in the prophet? We just had a look at the prophet. It's
just
a prophet. Well, what else is it said? It's just mental halachos. The basic idea of the prophet is to tell you who came aboard, and it's doing that. Where do you see a problem there? Why? What leads you to make an assumption just in the pocket? Good. Very good. If you take a look at it, because every nuance of the Torah is that significant. That's an important thing. The problem is, you read the Torah too quickly. You read it like a book or a story. You got every nuance. Now, there's nothing, the fact that the groups are enumerated, there's nothing unusual about that. That's important. You have to know who came aboard. But the order is slightly changed. So the city of Noach, the Ishto. And say, it's Vayelo Noach, Uvanav, the Ishto. So, Noach, the Ishto is a group, it's one unit, they should be mentioned together. Then it should have said, Vanav, then in the Sheva, Ishto. So there's been a complete separation between two groups that should have been together. Noach and his wife, and his sons and their wives. So there's a significance in that. So now Rashi shows Noach Ufanav, Anashim Levad, the Anashim Levad, the men alone and the women alone. If he's a Nesru, the Tashna Shemitah, because they were forbidden in Tashna Shemitah. Actually, they were forbidden, it was an issue. The Nesha Olam, Shoei Bitar, for the world was steeped in Tzar. Okay? Interesting that the prophet over here, from which he was interested, is referring to coming aboard. So, it's not telling you anything about how they were coexisted on the table, but the separation began in the manner in which they entered the ark, in fact, in point of fact. Okay? It's more than just telling you that they didn't do something on the ark, but it's telling you from the very way they entered. That's the first reference. More specifically, the first reference that involved the church, where it is a Shiva. It's a Shiva Hashem. Although it's not explicit. It's not an explicit Shiva, by the way. There's a difference between an explicit Shiva and an indication. Different. Because the project didn't say specifically. The project says, Bakimosia Shiva Ito. You'll rush out of Teva and you'll come to the Teva. So really, this, it has to be in the manner in which you enter the Teva. Ata. Again, there is that split, and Rashi picks up on it. So there's two questions. Why would the hair come from God? Here you see that but in other words, he picked up the message, Noah. God didn't say it explicitly, but God expressed himself in a way that the message is there. Of course, you can ask a question on that as well. Now you've got a question. So it's up. I mean, what kind of an issue is this? If it's an issue, then God should have been explicit about it. Normally, God doesn't hint that he's Guru. You read the parasha of the Arayos on Yom Kippur, there's no hint. You know, it's pretty explicit. If the man lieth with this person, if you lie with this one, etc. It's pretty wicked. The Torah, when it comes to the prohibitions, is generally speaking very explicit. It doesn't expect you to figure it out on your own. Here, some Mamanashah. Let's go with Mamanashah. Either it was God's will that he should refrain, or it was not God's will that he should refrain. So if it was God's will that he should refrain, it should have been explicit. If it was not God's will that he should have refrained, so there shouldn't be any problem at all. Yet, so what did God do? God expressed himself in such a way that he could sort of get the point. And Noah did get the point, and did choose to follow. The second question is that... not yet. The second question is that it's... the way it's expressed is in the actually coming on the ark. That they, it would appear that the separation had begun even before they were on the ark. The separation began at that point. Why is that? I mean, who cares about that? The key point is that while they were on the ark, they should not engage in constant tanuta. This implies that there was something even more than that. That's the second question. And of course, the third question is what's the whole point altogether? What's the reason for it? What is wrong? The Torah is not inherently against pleasure or if it's legitimate, the entire world would seek in corruption and in sexual deviation and total indulgence and so on and so forth. That's sinful, of course. But they were tzaddikim. These people were tzaddikim. They were righteous. They were married. In fact, in the proper context, a Tashmish on the God is a mitzvah. The fee of a man has to his wife and it's considered part of honest Shabbos. In fact, the common problem, one is in the Shabbos who is generally speaking is once a week. Expected to be in the Shabbos who does it once a week. So one is in the Chayiv and some Erev Shabbos. In Shabbos actually, on Shabbos. Because it's only Shabbos. So it's a mitzvah. So the Torah says, you know, squeamish about it. And if you would refrain from doing so, in a sense, it'd be over. Just like a person refrains from enjoying a good meal on Shabbos, that's an avera, because he's sick along in Shabbos. So if a person for no reason, would be mivatel full of tachas hamita on Shabbos, he says, avera v'yado, that's an issue. So you see, the Torah doesn't follow any types of emotions of funkai. The guy is overcome with a certain emotion of funkai, and he doesn't want to have tachas hamita with his wife on Shabbos for no valid reason, there's nothing full about that. That's not something that. That's just another. So the question would be, what is the basic underlying reason? Why should they cease normal life? Then isn't there a reference later on? Just look at all the references before we end up. Take a look at Meshachet. It's all the I doubt that Lakim al Mach Lemar, same in our table, this is what it says above. God tells you to leave the Teva. Atta v'yishtacha v'venecha neshev v'venecha itach. Here's different. Here it's atta v'yishtacha v'neva. Alright, so we have more problems. Okay, then it mentions all the animals that are to leave. Then v'yetei noach v'vanav v'yishtacha v'neva itach. But there is a slight change. In the command to board the ship, they were commanded to board separately. In the command to leave, God doesn't bring that in, that they have to leave them. But nevertheless, they're up that way anyway. I just noticed that. I'm just throwing that in. Rashi, Atta v'yishtacha, Ish v'yishtel. Kan hitu lahan tashmanikot. So here God gave them the heter. So Rashi, of course, l'shitata, is reading the order as a subtle reference to tashmanikot. So here you see that the issue was removed. Okay? There's no Rashi on the commentary, though, as far as it says. We have a problem. We have discovered a new question then. Because then, following the proper order, they should have left in the manner that should have been described, in other words. How they left in the is getting into. But the description should have followed the keyboard, the removal of the issue. And therefore, it should have said that Noach Vayei, but the Pasuk should have said, Vayei Noach V'yishtel, Ruvanu V'nishem V'anavita. So that remains, Rashi doesn't deal with that. So that's our question. Okay? So the name Amaral means that he was lacking in a certain level of Amunah. There was a certain element of resistance. Logically, he was convinced, and therefore he followed his mind, therefore he started. But the ultimate level where he had total emotional conviction on the basis of his knowledge was lacking an element of doubt enough. And the fact that the person does have an element of doubt does not mean that he can't be a child. He's not on the highest level of it. And the Neimeh model meant that he didn't enter until the last possible moment, which means to say, until it was clear to him that he'd been saying wrong, whatever the signs were. I don't know if he actually mean literally that he actually waited for the rain. That's not what Chazal was trying to tell him. Chazal was trying to convey that he had certain pockets of doubt and resistance. But to that extent, he really was lacking in terms of his picture. If he was in a higher level, if he was like Abraham, in other words, that this would have been, the marble would have been reality for him, just like anything else, and he would have been on board much earlier. There'd be no doubt in his mind. He wouldn't be waiting. The person that waits is not convinced at a certain level. All right, but of course he was sufficiently convinced to build the But you see, there's a certain quantitative factor in terms of Amunah. Amunah is subject to quantitative. That's why I said not in the inner mind. Quantitative thing. Okay, and Jonathan, the case with the Sinai, where that was part of the Achana, to separate from their wives, that I understand. I'm not making an issue out of that. That's clearly understood. That they had to raise themselves to a certain level of Kedusha because they were going to receive the Torah. They were going to be in communication with the Kedusha Baruch Hu, to hear the Asar of Dibros and on Sinai. So that we understand you have to elevate yourself. Now, when a person has to elevate himself, like he said, when Yom Kippur, he has to separate himself from bodily involvement. Immediately thereafter, God comes through Yishael, Lechel Alechem, right? He comes return to the tent. But that was a euphemism. The tent means return to your normal lifestyle. This is just 3 days. Because they were supposed to be engaged in preparation. So that makes sense. I don't see why. Right? I don't see why that requires any explanation. But this is not, there was no people within 40 days to be involved in any type of a Kedusha. Here it is only because the world is Shari B'Shar. That's the question to us. The world is Shari B'Shar. The world is being destroyed for its sins. You're being saved. So what? That's because it's not the same idea. Methodology, again, like I showed you, or I will show you anyway, in the Rambam, the series of questions containing Shiva, Lodim, Sadevim, and Machadero. First of all, I showed you that when you're asking about phenomena, you have to be able to isolate and get to the main question. The distinction between the main questions and the secondary question like that. Now, in terms of answering, when you try to seek an answer, in a case like this, you should try for the essential issue. That's what I would say. You go for the essential question. Why it's not stated, I mean, I can't get into telling you why something is hinted at or stated or whatever until I know the nature of the prohibition. I'd like to get to the nature. Once we understand that, that by itself should illustrate for us to open up the door to the other issues. Okay? So that's what I want to know. But the prime question, that's the question that was raised, is what was the reason for the issue of Tashkent called Mario aboard the ark? Well, why? And the Rashi says it was Shari B'Shar. So what, how does that explain it? Because it's not an explanation. It sounds, again, here's something which most Balabatim would not ask. Most ordinary people wouldn't ask because emotionally it's appealing to a certain emotion within it. There is a certain firm emotion or guilt emotion that would agree, yeah. But that's not an explanation. That's not a logical explanation. We're searching for a logical explanation. But the point that, hold it a second. There's different elements over here. Yeah, let me give you two separate answers. For the one is that the round things down, that's in the relationship between a man and his wife, is that he should not have deal with his wife when they're in a state of anger. When he's in a state of anger with her. I don't know that has anything to do with this. That's from a different point. That means to say that he should conduct in sexual relations, even that when it's with her, it should not just be an instinctual physical thing. You shouldn't act like a behemoth. So therefore, that may be part of the whole framework of the relationship. And therefore, it should be done in a proper stage. He shouldn't coerce her, he's not allowed to coerce her, and they should both be happy, and it should be something which is a positive in terms of strengthening the relationship. That makes sense. Otherwise, it's a mark of behemoth. So even in the framework of marriage, a person can act like a behemoth. Ram is saying that if a person is in a state of anger, then he should not engage in a relationship with his wife at that time. So that's different. That has nothing to do with this. As far as what you're saying, during the time of calamity to the deceiver, that's something else. That still isn't the same thing, because then you're involved. Like, what goes there, it's like when tragedies start to call your girl, and what goes there, kindness on them, so the time part of the kindness. It's part of our children, we're involved in children, kindness, and so forth. Like the people of Nineveh, when Yonah said they were about to be destroyed, so they were good children, so they wore sackcloth, so they, that was the time of Tsar. When they were involved, they were also, they were the criminals, and they had the children, in order to do it, they had to remove themselves from all bodily gratification. So what that still wouldn't explain our case. Because that wasn't the, no one said that he had to fast, and no one said that he was involved in any tshuva. He had not, as far as we know, he was a tzaddik, never a tzaddik. Tell him why he's a dorosa. A dorosa, but not for dorosa shalavna. Okay, it's machlokas. Some say it's for shevach, some say it's for gnai. Fine. But, he's not, but everybody agrees that no one's a tzaddik. So I don't see the connection either from either side. It doesn't explain it. Okay? He wanted to say the reason he is was because the only purpose of Tashemut is for the sake of Puru, but at that point in time there was no need for that. Assuming, even if I assume that all that is correct, that's not what Rashi said. Rashi should have said that reason. Rashi said no. It was after because the world is short of the top. So therefore, it's unrelated to the issue of Puru. The short of the top means that they're in a state of destruction, physical climate. If you mean that... If you mean to say it's reference to their spiritual corruption, if that was the oath there, then it should have been, as we know, God of that generation. Of that generation. That God gave them 120 years. That God gave them 120 years. So at least 120 years they were engaged in that corruption. And it was the Lister of Tasha.
No, but see, the reason why they're...
The end of Bereshit. The very end of Bereshit. In Parshas Vayechi, after the death and the burial of Yaakov, a very, very interesting and very touching story, emotionally touching story. The brothers, you know the whole mindset of the brothers. The brothers were afraid, for various reasons, that Yosef still might harbor some revenge against them. And that, in spite of all of his declarations and his motel, they still had certain fears. And they felt that he was controlling himself until the death of Yaakov, but that after Yaakov had died, he might be inclined to take revenge. So after the death of Yaakov, they came to him and said, that's a new Tetzvah, but you are Yosef, you make of him. And the brothers of Yosef said to the father died, Vayamulo, and they said, Lose the man of Yosef. Vahashiv Yosef Wanu, et Kalaroa, Ashagamano. It's amazing. After all those years have passed, he would think, yes. After all, this is many, many years after the event, and after the reconciliation, about 17 years since the reconciliation, and everything was going wonderful, and yet they still were afraid he might make them harbor a grudge and take revenge. See, I don't want that all these years to say, you see. That shows, in a sense, they respect the other. And in other words, the average guy, even after a certain amount of time, he forgets whatever it is. But they made a mistake. They made a mistake in their assessment of Yosef. But given that they thought that there was a possibility that he still hated them, then the passage of time would be nothing. They knew that a man like Yosef would carry it out. That time wouldn't affect him. If it were true that he really was intending to punish them, Then the fact that all these years had passed would be meaningless for a man like Yosef. That showed their respect him. You follow? What they didn't realize was they didn't have a full appreciation of how he functioned and why, in fact, he didn't harbor any revenge at all. That was the fact. But They were operating on the assumption that he did have the revenge. If that's the case, the fact that over all those years had passed would mean nothing for a man like Yezra. Okay? In other words, like, it's a defect in people when they say, like now, when he's not a Nazi. And he's very old. And they say, well, after all these years, you know, I look at my argue that way. But what's the point? That is a defect. That's a serious flaw. If it's vicious, there's no statute of limitations. In no way brings about any change. If the guy's Chayav Mitzvah from 60 years ago, and you find him that he's Chayav Mitzvah, a person that operates on a rational category wouldn't be affected by this kind of thing. Now, what happens? So they come to Yosef. Vayitzavu el Yosef Roma. They command him saying, Abdi Fakti Velaru, the same also Lemor. They made up a story that they said that Yaakov had left instructions. Tosom le Yosef. Onosom atashachachach vachatosom kirag maluka. That Yaakov had left a message to please tolerate the sin of your brothers, for your revenge would be a chesh. Yaakov le Pesha Avdei. I will say everything. And now, please tolerate the pesha, the chesh, the sin of the servant of the God of your father. And that was their plea. They made a very, very passing plea, but he couldn't take revenge. And what was Joseph's reaction? A yes, Yosef, the God of my life. He has a cross. And then, they came and they saw him punching, they offered to be slaves to him. Then Yosef said to him, I'll be well. He asked, Sachas, I was him on him. Yosef, do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? He asked him, Chashav, come on, I wrong. You thought you were going to do me some harm. I was him, Chashav, what's all of us? No, God made him for good. The man I saw, Kayom, I go, Lachias, I'm wrong. It was all part of God's plan. All right, we have to analyze this in its time, what kind of an argument this is. It's a separate thing. The Yata Al-Tiroro, Anachi Al-Chalka Al-Sham, he reassured them. The Yastatchan, Ayanachim Al-Sham, he comforted them. Ayatabra Al-Livam, he spoke to their heart. So he came up with an answer, and the answer was such that it was effective. It affected them, and it put them at ease. But what stands out over here is one thing. What is that? By Yates, the OK family. Why are you talking about
what?
Why are you talking? What made him cry? Yosef was a. If you see, that to be a rational person is not. People have a wrong concept. People in the yeshiva. And a lot of people have a mistaken notion about, you know, since they emphasize rationality, and talking about that, we're eventually emotions, you know, like they have the concept that a rational person is the one who has no emotions. He's supposed to divest himself of all emotions, he'd be totally cold. That's totally false. It's absurd. It's not part of the philosophy. You know, I wouldn't know if anything here ever said that, that's for sure. And so then part of the Torah. By Yosef was a supremely rational individual. Chacham in all of his ways. Yes, I'm right. He's been many times. He's the one who was carrying out his plan against the brothers. Many points along the way, he had to leave the room to cry. He had to do what he was doing, but it had a tremendous emotional effect upon him. He asked the question over there, too. Why was he crying? He's doing the right thing. But I'm asking it right over here. I think this is relevant to the story that we're taking up right now. What's the nature of this fakir? Why is it called? Why is it called after he reported? The Torah doesn't record every, it's not a history book, every detail. The essential is the answer. That's what I want to know. I want to know what he said to them to get them to change their mind. That's important. But it mentions by Yehud Yosef the God of the name. So, that's why it's important. He cried because he identified with the thing. He understood, in other words, he had not broken himself away. A cold person would be like, would be affected. In other words, he had a certain compassion for the human condition. They had sinned, and he saw that they were in pain. They were very different, and they were in a state of fear. And the fact, and they came before him and they pleaded. When he saw people in that situation, that they because they had sinned and they regretted it and they were afraid he might take revenge, they were pleading and they offered themselves to be a slave, and he cried because he identified with their, he had compassion. He had genuine compassion for humanity. And that's different. A person that's lacking in compassion for humanity is corrupt. And that's something that you have to be extremely aware of. It's a dangerous kind of a sin when people begin to choose the path of perfecting themselves and improving themselves and learning, especially when you're learning with the devil, you know, and you're able to show that you can break other people down. Very often, this learning leads to a decrease in compassion and leads to an increase in aggressiveness. It's a phenomenon you see in that, in yeshivas in general, it's not just our yeshiva, and unfortunately perhaps a little bit more, because in our yeshiva we stress the psychological thinking, so that gives us certain tools. And you're able to separate yourself from the rest of mankind and look down upon people that don't have a job. And begin to regard other people, in other words, you begin to break down the world into two different categories. And there'll be elite, meaning anyone that can think rationally, right? And then there's the hamon. And well, you know, that's just the hamon, you know. You have to deal with them. It's politics, whatever, but you have to be careful how you answer them, whatever, because that's from the hamon. But between me, I gave them that answer because, you know, hamon, balabas, you know, kind of. Now, there's a certain amount of reality here. That is true. I mean, you have to be aware of the fact that there are people that do not share the same philosophical foundations and have a lot of ideas which we would regard as false ideas. But the question is, what should be our attitude towards them? Do we have a right to feel that we are superior and they are inferior beings and we look down upon them? To do so would be the height of corruption. A person that would have that attitude would not really be gaining perfection. I think he'd be corrupting himself as a result of his knowledge. Because you should have nothing but compassion and ava, and you realize that you're really no different than them. The mistake that you make is that you really think you're different. The truth of the matter is, you're all the same. And the only reason why you happen to have this is because of good fortune, not because of your own greatness. Because you were fortunate to be able to have been subjected, where each person, if he looks back, will have found that he is no different than these people. He had the same ideas, would have had the same ideas, but due to circumstances, he found the obey him, whatever influences people, individuals, and even that, it wasn't. Many people didn't just run to the ideas. They had a fight with them, and they argued and this and such. If you're honest with yourself, you will see that you're no different than them. I think it's part of If you can't see that you're the same as them, then you've got a problem. If you view yourself as being different, as being superior, then you have a serious problem. And if the feeling should be one of ava is love, because we're all probably so, and the feeling should be one of compassion. And of course, when you're dealing with issues, it doesn't mean to see compassion, doesn't mean that you have to agree to something which is false and nonsensical, if a person is promoting a crazy idea. That's quite a different thing. I'm not saying that. And when you deal, this is something else. Dealing with particular issues that come up, or questions that they, or minhagim, and what, that's something else. The chachmei haTorah always have to deal with the so-called hamam. There was always a pressure of the amaratim and so forth, and how we should make decisions in terms of Jewish life. That doesn't mean it's an important lesson. This is my concept of Musa. Musa comes from philosophy. And it's something which affects everybody here. It affects all of us. It affects me. It affects all of us. It's very important. Whatever I speak about to you is part of myself. The same thing. So I'm not saying that you have to draw the line, and the only way to draw the line is by with Chachma. If that Chachma is in line with the proper emotion, if you're perfected, then you'll know. In certain cases, you have to fight the Hamas. You can't give in to crazy practices. You have to know how to do it, where you want. It can't stem from that emotion, then. The emotion that these people are really not even people. They're just basically on the level of animals or whatever it is. Okay? Now that's by Yates Yosef. Of course, in that case, the brothers were high-level people. But Yosef was on a higher level. And Yosef had genuine compassion for the human condition. And therefore he was saddened. And I would say that that's the same thing over here. This part was mentioned. That the fact of the matter is that they were ashamed and they're deserving of destruction. And your point is well taken, Bruce. There is a relation to the idea of my third age doesn't be out. It's not identical. The point does have relevance at a certain level. And you're being saved, you're excited. But don't think that to engage, that's the differentiation. How do you go aboard the table? You go aboard the table with the sense that I'm different, I'm an elite, I have no identification with these people. And these lowly people that never really even deserved existence in the first place are being like that. This is the way it should be. Well, I'm going aboard with a sense of fairness. Because even when they boarded me, even when they bore you, it's not just that they didn't. It's not just that they didn't practice it. It was the very entry aboard the ark was to demonstrate, or to demonstrate the state of sadness. But there's a certain sadness that we feel. So the whole world is shared the car. We feel the car of the world, and that's how lucky even this man is. I remember that Wright Tate made this point during the Gulf War. And it wasn't only because of Israel. That was before. He made this point, I'm pretty sure it was before that Israel was attacked. Kamachomo, when Israel was on the attack, even before. That was because it just happened to come out about the time of the vacation, interesting like that. And he said that it's also for people to go out and unplug this system. And he brought it from him. He said, because it's not just toughness. I mean, toughness is mean to engage in your own luxury. Because the whole world is shared with God. Well, it wasn't that necessarily Jews. The world was shared with us. The major world conflagration, I mean, involving hundreds of thousands of people. The world was shared with us. You can't engage in your own titles now. The Don Fletcher. I don't know. Those who were here at the time, remember that? I don't know. Yeah. Okay. But that was even before. I'm pretty sure that was even before Israel was attacked. I don't think it was contingent upon that. Certainly that made it even more of a stop for us. Definitely. But even without that factor, during World War II, for example, would have been a situation. The whole world was sharp cut. So that's why, it wasn't just, that explains why they entered, even why they entered that way. And I would say that that's why there's no specific issue here. It wasn't a specific issue. It wasn't a halakhic issue. It was simply something which stems from perfection. And that's why God communicated it, not the Torah system. But God communicated the idea in the expression to indicate that there's an idea to think about, because this is something which makes sense as an expression of perfection. And Noah picked up on the idea, and he was ready, he was on the level for that perfection. Then I would say this perhaps explains the way to speak him afterwards when God communicated to him, that God communicated that the situation was now over. The situation is now over, and at this point, technically speaking, the issue is removed. But no, that was wrong. Psychologically, it shows the extent that he reached, even in leaving. So leaving the ark is the last connection to the stuff. It's leaving it. Of course, then you have to move on with your new life. But God was merely saying that from this point on, the eighth star is over, and technically speaking, it's committed. But Noah wanted to retain the idea for his own personal perfection, so that the ark itself represented the destruction of mankind, the fact that I was saved. Now, the fact that I was saved, I can't allow myself to indulge any feeling of superiority. And I can't allow it to take away from feelings of compassion. So even as he left the ark, he wants to leave in that way. He wants to leave in the same way he entered. In a state of identification and connection and rahmanas for the plight of the world. That was another question. Okay.